But as time had gone on, and the likelihood of breaking free of Dr. Jean's tyranny had receded further into the distance, they had just thought of it as home. They found that people were going about their everyday business as though they hadn't been missed. Ryan and Christy were washing clothes by the shore, while JB was checking the inventory from all their blasters and his canvas bags, which had been returned to them the previous evening. Marissa took this as a sign that the travelers had agreed to fight and could hardly contain her excitement. Jack, on the other hand, preferred to hold his own counsel until he found out more. There was no sign of Mildred or Doc, but as soon as they saw Jack, the other three expressed their relief.
Thought you might have walked out on us for good that time, but maybe you were just otherwise occupied.
A lot to think about.
I'm sure.
Rad, we need to talk.
That we do, but I think we should do it alone.
That's only right. I got some talk of my own to do.
When'd you get those back?
Last night. All I had to do was ask nicely. I reckon after that little performance they gave us, they figured they had to try to keep us on their side somehow. Doc and Mildred will be along in a moment. They've been taking a look at some of the sick here, seeing if there's anything they can do. Just looking to be useful.
Doc and Mildred made their way over to where the others were gathered by the pond.
We need to make decisions here. They want us to fight with them, but I'm not so sure about that.
I have to. If anything in the bayou is ever going to be the same again, we need to take out Jean. Besides, if we try to go on, we'd come up against the sec anyway. You bet your life they got the redoubt.
No, that's not certain. But it is something we've got to consider. I know this place means a lot to you.
This land, these people, all there is left. This goes, nothing else. If this goes, then maybe me as well. No choice for me, no matter what you want.
As Jack finished, it sank into the others exactly what he meant. He would stay, regardless of their decision.
The bayou can never mean to us what it does to you, Jack. But maybe you don't know what you mean to us. What we mean to each other. I'm not convinced that we've got the blasters or the manpower, even with these behind us, to take on Dr. Jean. Could be a one-way ticket to an early grave. But one thing I do know is that we won't just go without you.
We wreck where Jean is, see what he's got, see if we can do it. You, me, a couple others. Small party.
Sounds fair. We need to know what we're up against, regardless of our eventual decision. So, I figure we do it this way. And even if we leave the fight, at least we know what we have to scout around.
They turned to find Marissa, Beausoleil, and most of the settlement descending on them.
So you gonna do it, like Jack says?
Maybe. We've got a plan. We don't know where Jean's main base is and what his assets are. If we're gonna mount an attack, then we need to know that. Or else his superior numbers are just gonna blow us away.
But you all gonna help us.
Maybe. No point chilling ourselves in an all-out attack if he's too strong.
But Jack said that...
I'm not talking for Jack, and he wasn't talking for us. Nothing settled. What I'm saying is this. Some of us form a wreck party and take a good look at what John's got and how he operates. Not until then will I say anything else.
You all know what I think about this, but I'll tell you one thing. I can see exactly why they want to do this. Think about it. For all your talk of fighting Dr. Jean, what do any of you actually know about his sec force, his defenses, his armory? Nothing. Do this task, and even if they decide they don't want to stand with you, then at least you know what you have to do for yourselves.
The settlement dwellers looked at one another. Talking about facing up to Jean's might was one thing, but being part of a small party at the mercy of his roving enemy squad was another. There was a mumble of hushed discussion among them.
We went to two with Marissa yesterday, LaRue and Prideau. They know how we fight. We know a bit about them. And we can trust that.
Oh, fuck it. I should be pleased you think that of me. But I wish you hadn't. Be a bastard to go up against all that firepower with just five men.
We're not facing them off. It's a wreck mission. The whole point is to stay out of the way, see and not be seen.
Easier said than done.
Shut up, Stoop. You going. What about you, Prideau? You want to argue too?
Never argue with you, Beth. I'm in.
The settlement was abuzz with the realization that something was actually going to happen. The villagers dispersed and went about their everyday business, leaving the companions alone with Marissa, LaRue, and Prideau. The two men looked uneasy now that it had come to action.
It's simple. You get your weapons together and then we go. We're more or less prepared, then we set off. After all, you know where we're going.
Within half an hour, they were ready to go. While LaRue and Prideaux gathered their gear, Marissa filled in the travelers on their route. Jack knew where she was sending them, and to his amazement, it was beyond West Lowellton, into the heart of Old Lafayette.
But everything is dead. Massan's alive.
That's the bastard Jean all over. That old veal sewn up tighter than a chastity belt. Nothing and no one gets in or out. And only the sick patrols go over those dead lands now.
Then how come we didn't come across one?
Maybe the time of day. Jean's veal work mostly by night. And that's when the sick patrols ride. During the day, they sleep.
And he just leaves the surrounding lands unpatrolled. That's arrogance right there.
Don't know what that means, but Jean thinks everyone's with him, and we hide like frightened rabbits. Who else is there in the bayou now he owns it?
We'll see. Where are your men?
Prideaux and LaRue arrived, ready but reluctant. Marissa briefed them on what she had just told Carter's men, and outlined to them the route she wanted them to take.
You don't trust them to get it right themselves?
It's not that. I've been nearer than anyone, and I know better than anyone. That's why I should be gone.
Ryan and Jack ignored her protests. They made their goodbyes to Doc, Mildred, and Christy, and began the journey back to West Lowellton. It was a shorter return trip than they expected. This time they had guides who knew where they were going and the quickest routes to take. They traveled in silence for most of the time. LaRue and Prideaux had little to say, neither did Jack. For JB and Ryan, it was a matter of saving their breath so that they could keep pace with the swamp dwellers, who dealt easily and naturally with the conditions. They skirted around the area where they had encountered the swampies and managed to avoid any roving groups of the muties. One of the few times LaRue spoke was when he told them that he and Prideaux knew the habits of the muties, as they had hunted in this area and had learned the best times to avoid them. The dull-witted swampies were very much creatures of habit. Observing the muties' routines kept the hunters out of trouble. It wasn't long before the five-man party had reached the suburb of West Lowellton. They made their way rapidly through the debris of the battered buildings.
Whew! Haven't been here for years. Kind of forgot what it was like.
It was now dusk, and the recon party had to slow its pace as it moved toward the heart of the old city. The sec patrols would be coming out of the main ville. They needed to remain undetected, so that any subsequent attack would come as a complete surprise. They were about a mile from the main ville when the noise began. Whatever it was, the feeling of oppression and gloom that hung over the ruined city suddenly grew sharper and more defined.
What the hell is that?
That is Dr. Jean getting his people psyched up. I suggest we take cover now. This is not the place to be out in the open.
Ryan, JB, and Jack had no idea what he meant by that, but followed his and LaRue's lead by taking cover in an old building nearby.
First floor, if it will hold, just to be sure. Now wait, and you'll see some of that what we're up against. That old road down there leads from the main gate of Jean's stronghold and out into the lands beyond. You just watch.
They crouched in silence in the shadows.
Wags. Powerful ones, too, by the sound of them.
Where would Jean get them from? Or the fuel to power them?
Whew. Bayou pretty big. That's a whole lot of ground. A lot of bills that he's ridden over the last few years.
The lights on the wags began to illuminate the road and the surrounding buildings. The wreck party drew into the shadows, moving farther back so that they wouldn't be caught by any stray beams. There were a dozen wags in all, each of them painted a strange combination of yellow, purple, and red. Even at dusk, the colors seemed to jump off the wags. The vehicles themselves were at least three different models. There were a dozen men in each wag. All sat upright, unnaturally stiff, and all of them wore dark goggles. They were dressed in fatigues dyed the same color as the wags, and they held a variety of blasters. Some had AK-47s, others had M-16s, and there were a couple that weren't quite clear enough for JB to identify from this range and in this light. But they were all heavy duty.
The shades help him see in the dark. Don't ask me how.
But Ryan knew, and wondered how Dr. Jean had got hold of a cache of infrared goggles.
The wags will branch off to cover a certain area. When they reach a central point, the segmen get out of the wag and mount a foot patrol. And believe me, they're vicious bastards if you cross them.
I can't believe we never came across them in the swamps, or heard them for that matter.
Not so strange. They move like ghosts, they're so quiet. Never talk, never make a sound. Unless you run straight into them, they could probably walk real close and you wouldn't spot them. Something else. No smell. Like they had all their body scent taken off.
Maybe they have. Dr. Jean's got hold of some old white coat tech, and maybe there's some old sec thing in there that could work.
Yeah, seen enough weird shit from back then to make it possible.
What are you talking about? What do you know about this?
Nothing yet. We've seen plenty of old tech on our travels, but we do know enough to know we don't know shit until we've had a better look.
By now, the procession of wags had receded into the distance. The street below was empty, and Ryan led the recon party to street level, pausing at the blown-off doors of the old block.
LaRue, Prideaux, you know the sec layout and the boundaries on this ville, right? So you take the lead. We want the weakest point, right?
No such thing. The whole place is walled and guarded.
Oh, there's always a weak point. You just have to find it.
There is one thing. If you don't mind wading through shit...
Better to wade through shit than get sprayed by blaster fire. Take us there.
Prideaux led the recon party off the main drag and through the deserted side streets and squares of the old city. They paused to scavenge in the ruins for wood they could use as poles for their torches and tore off strips of their clothing that they wrapped and bound around the end.
This'll do it. Waste of good spirits. But what the hell?
LaRue unscrewed his flask and poured its contents over the two bundles of rags they had made on the poles. The liquor smelled. It would burn easily. Both Ryan and JB had lighters that still had flints in them, so lighting the torches should be easy when the time came.
Can, but don't light them till I say. This is the tricky part.
They turned a corner and faced the walls of the ville. The noise was still muffled, and it was no surprise, for although they were now only a few hundred yards from Jean's stronghold, the walls his people had built were thick and strong. They were 40 feet high, made of rubble and concrete, and stacked like a dam, so that they were thick at the bottom and narrowing to a point at the top. Although they were uneven and angled enough to attempt a climb, the top was strung with barbed wire, decorated with human body parts and the occasional head. Every 100 yards there were blaster ports, with what looked like drum-operated blasters. Thompson's, J.B. guessed, unable to see clearly, mounted under canopied awnings to shield them from daylight. Each post had two men on it, though both could have been dummies for all the sound and movement they made.
Pretty difficult, huh? Stupid thing is, where they've got the old buildings inside there up and running, they still shit in the old way. They use the old sewers, but they don't keep them guarded.
Arrogant fool probably thinks no one is as smart as him and wouldn't think of it. We've seen that kind of attitude before. Are you certain about this?
Sure as I can be. When Amita found it, it was Marissa. She was keen for us to go under, but we weren't having any of it, you know?
So you haven't actually been into the ville?
Been into the end of the old sewer, but never came up in the ville. No how, though. Saw that much.
Let's do it.
Ryan and the others followed Prideaux and LaRue as they scouted around the ruined buildings on the edge of the ville. Dr. Jean hadn't bothered to clear a defensive open space between his entrenchments and the old city, so they were able to move easily within the shadow of the wall and remain in cover. Yet again, it was a sign of the man's overconfidence.
Down here.
At the end of the alley, the asphalt had been broken and the ruptured sewer had risen up in a land movement, the broken concrete pipe breaking the surface.
Fire blast. There must be one great buildup of shit at the bottom of that.
Oh, don't worry. Not as bad as that. It runs back from here and into another pipe at the junction about 50 yards that away, so it goes under there.
Prideaux and LaRue, holding the torches, squeezed themselves into the narrow channel between the top of the pipe and the road surface, half falling, half scrambling down the length of pipe until they reached the bottom. Ryan went next, followed by JB and finally by Jack. They descended into darkness, desperately feeling under hands and feet for something to slow their descent, trying to keep balance when it became hard to know which way was up. At the bottom of the pipe, with the illumination of the torches, it was easy to see what their route would be. The concrete pipes had a 5.5-foot circumference, requiring JB and Ryan to stoop as they progressed. For the smaller swamp dwellers and Jack, it was an easy avenue of progress. The sewer stank, not as badly as might have been expected, as it was built for a larger ville, the old city of Lafayette, but still enough to cause them to take shallow breaths to avoid gagging. It wasn't until they'd walked 100 yards, past the first junction of the pipe, that the incline they had entered through leveled out fully, and they hit the flow of sewage and the rats. The light from the torches, hissing and spluttering from the alcohol poured on them, was enough to drive all but the most adventurous of the rodents into the farthest reaches of the gloom. Wordlessly, using only gestures, Prideaux and LaRue guided the group through the maze, following the flow of sewage that came from the enclosed ville. It was easy to see the point at which they moved under the wall, as the concrete suddenly came alive with a flow of stinking water and solids, whereas before they had seen empty and long dry pipes, with just the main flow out from the enclosed ville.
Okay, now how do we get up there?
Along here.
They walked through the flow for another 50 yards, until they came to a ladder set into a narrow tunnel that shot upward from the pipe. Ryan looked up. There was a metal cover over the top of the tunnel.
Most of them along here you can't trust, but this one comes up in a yard behind one of the buildings. Don't know what they do in there, but Marissa said it was empty at night, so no one can see you come out.
How do you know it's the right one?
Prideaux pointed to the curved wall of the pipe at the side of the ladder's bottom rungs. An X was scratched into the concrete, a dull rusty color in the indent made by a blade of some kind.
Marissa left a mark.
Ryan decided to take first crack at the ladder, but Jack stopped him. He knew that his eyes were better adjusted to the dark, and he also knew that his reflexes were quicker. Ryan was fast, but Jack's were honed to an almost preternatural state. And that might make all the difference when it came to getting out alive. Jack estimated that the sewers were sunk to about 15 feet below the surface, counting it off as he ascended the ladder, feeling the cold concrete closing around him, the light from the torches receding. The air got close and stale as he reached the iron covering at the head of the ladder. Reaching up experimentally, he put a hand to it, testing the weight. It was heavy, but not immovable. He drew his Colt Python with his free hand, leaning his back against the cold concrete, using his balance as a lever to push against the metal. It moved, and as he slid it back, he cautiously raised his head, taking a look around for as near to 360 degrees as he could manage in this position. Marissa had been right. The tunnel brought them up into the courtyard of a building that was currently empty. The remaining three sides were walled to a height of about 12 feet. There was noise coming from beyond these walls, but inside, in the building, all was quiet. Jack heaved himself out into the yard and stood cover for the other four as they lifted themselves out of the sewer. Prideaux and LaRue came last, extinguishing their torches in the effluent flow and wedging them in the bottom of the ladder for their return. When all five of the recon party were above ground and the sewer cover was back in place, they made their way across the yard.